Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. We're going to be starting chapter 12, which is the beginning of the last section, which runs from chapter 12 through 14. It is an oracle. We saw the first oracle was chapter 9 through 11. We just finished going through those verses. Now we're going to have a second oracle. It's going to be addressed to Israel. And point 9 and 10 at the bottom of this page, on page one of the notes, there's two basic events that take place in these chapters. One is going to be the final siege of Jerusalem, S-E-I-G-E. The nation's going to surround Jerusalem. It's something we've seen in other places in the scriptures. But then also it's going to be the arrival of the Messiah. The Messiah is going to arrive, deliver Jerusalem, but also will bring, besides deliverance, physical deliverance, will bring salvation, spiritual deliverance. And so that is what these three chapters are about, that very thing. The nations laying siege to Jerusalem and the arrival of the Messiah. If you look at, I can't see where it's at on here. Yeah, point eight, the phrase, in that day or on that day is used 16 times in these verses. So, on that day, and that's referring to the day of the Lord. So, 16 times is referred to. It really, again, as we study this, as we read this, you know, you're free to make thoughts of your own, you know, come to conclusions. But it really, I think, is pushing these chapters into the eschatology phase. This is something that's not going to be in 518 or through Alexander or with the first coming of the Messiah. It's not going to be the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. It's going to be at the end whenever that takes place. Of course, if you have different eschatologies, you'll try to put it in at different places. But we'll read the verses and see how that takes place. I'm going to go ahead and read. I'll just read chapter 12. We're going to be looking at verses 1 through 9 tonight, talking again mainly about Jerusalem being surrounded and the Lord is going to be delivering them. Again, we'll look at a couple other places in Scripture you also see this. And it's pretty clear it is a physical deliverance. But then beginning in verse 10, we'll start that next week, you now have what appears to be the spiritual awakening, them coming to the Lord as a nation. And again, Paul talks about it in Romans. He says all Israel will be saved. And when all Israel is saved, what can that mean except, you know, if their rejection met salvation for the Gentiles, and that's what happened when the Jews rejected, it sent off the apostles to the Gentile worlds with the message, as the Old Testament said. If their rejection meant salvation, what will their acceptance mean, Paul says, except the resurrection? And so that would also tie in verses 10 to the end of the chapter, verse 14, when you do see Israel as a nation responding to Jesus, it's the end. It is the time for the resurrection. And that continues into chapter 13. And then when you get to chapter 14, it's basically detailing these events. You're going to have, again, chapter 14 begins, a day of the Lord is coming. And then it talks about the nations coming against Jerusalem and the Lord showing up and going forth like he does in the day of battle and actually landing or his feet standing on the Mount of Olives, the victory. And then the end of the chapter describes the kingdom of the Lord being established and what will be taking place during that kingdom age. So 12, 13, and 14 is not necessarily in sequential order, but it is in a topic category. Chapter 14, again, may repeat with some detail some of the things that have already been said, but whatever's taking place on that day is going to be at the time of the Lord's return or setting up the events that lead to the Lord's return. So I'll read chapter 12. I'll just read through chapter 12, and then we'll start looking at some of the details on this. Chapter 12, verse 1, in the NIV, says this is, well, it says in the NIV at the very top, it says an oracle. So I will point you out, if you want to turn to page two of your notes. No, it's on the bottom of page one. Bottom of page one of the notes. In the English Standard, it says, and this is, you know, more as the way it's written, the oracle of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. In the NIV, it says, an oracle. This is the word of the Lord concerning Israel. So, again, all those words are together. They're just arranging them in some kind of format for you to read. So this is, again, and while we're doing that, flip over to chapter 9, verse 1 of chapter 9. This is the first oracle. Now, again, the book of Zach, we're in chapter 9, and I'm saying first oracle. We've already had the eight visions. We've already had some details of things explained, Zachariah explaining things to the people of his time period, what they're going to do, had symbolism and things taking place there. But in chapter 9, verses chapter 9, 10, 11, it is the first oracle. So this is a different section of the book of Zechariah. And then after chapter 9, 10, 11, chapter 12, 13, 14 is the second oracle. And notice chapter 9, verse 1, the word, it says, an oracle, the word of the Lord is against the land of Hadrach and will rest on Damascus. So chapter 9, 10, and 11 are an oracle, or also a word that is translated burden. You can see the word is masa on the first page of notes, M-A-S-S-A in the Hebrew, masa. It means an oracle, a burden. It's like a prophetic word that has rested on the prophet, and they've got to speak it. They've got to say it. And that's, in a sense, what it's referring to. But this burden, or this oracle, chapter 9, 10, 11, was against the land of Hadrach and will rest on Damascus. And that was talking about the land of Syria, the land of Lebanon, and coming down the coast, what was going to happen to the nations. And it included Alexander the Great coming through. It included him approaching Jerusalem, but the Lord delivering Jerusalem. It talked about the first coming of the Lord coming in on the donkey, and some of the details there. And ends with the good shepherd coming to the flock that was marked for slaughter, being rejected or detested by the flock, and then him also rejecting the flock and handing the flock over to the foolish or worthless shepherd. And so chapter 11 ends with Israel rejecting the good shepherd, detesting the good shepherd, the good shepherd rejecting Israel, handing him over to a foolish shepherd who's going to eat them, torture them, and then abandon them, and leaving them to their fate to be destroyed, to be killed, and then even eating each other. And that is how chapter 11 ends, or the first oracle ends. Now, the second oracle, you're going to notice, is completely different. Time has gone on. Again, we're assuming time has gone on. Something has transpired, and now all of a sudden, the Lord is ready to restore, rebuild Jerusalem. So chapter 12, now we go back to that. It says, an oracle, this is the word of the Lord concerning Israel. So see, that was about Hadrach and the word resting on Damascus. And, it, you know, if you actually put it in context the way that we try to do, it was introducing the coming of Alexander and the events that take place leading up to the time of Christ. This now is an oracle concerning Israel, not Judah. It talks about Judah, talks about Jerusalem, but it says Israel. And it's not northern Israel. When it says Israel, it's probably talking about, let's make more noise down here. We got a furnace, a compressor, and now we got something else. Fortunately, with the audio on the mic is going to be a little bit clearer than the house sound. But this is definitely saying Israel, and it's going to be probably the 12 tribes, which means the 12 tribes restored and brought back together. So again, it's a unique time that's being talked about. Okay, reading chapter 12, verse 1. This is an oracle. This is the word of the Lord concerning Israel, the Lord who stretches out the heavens, who lays the foundation of the earth, and who forms the spirit of man within him. Three things, we'll come back and talk about it. I am going to make Jerusalem a cup that sends all surrounding peoples reeling. Judah will be besieged as well as Jerusalem. On that day, when all the nations of the earth are gathered against her, I will make Jerusalem an immovable rock. for all the nations. Again, now that sounds completely different than 586 BC when Babylon came in, and 70 AD when the Romans came in. This time when they come, it's immovable, and it's a cup. It's a part of the cup of judgment. All who try to move it will injure themselves. And it's talking about the peoples or the nations, plural. Probably when it says nations, it's not that nation and that nation. It's probably the world. I mean, you can almost assume universe. Again, we'll talk about it, and that's me adding to it or interpreting it. Some people would say, like, if you're a preterist, you'd say, well, that's exactly what Rome did. When Rome came, it wasn't just Rome. Many nations, Rome had conquered many nations, and many of those nations came with Rome and participated in the assault on Jerusalem. So this took place when Rome, or the many nations that were with Rome, attacked Jerusalem. Except it's not going to be destroyed. See, it's going to be immovable. It's not 70 AD. All who try to move it will injure themselves. On that day, key, again, that eschatological phrase, on that day I will strike every horse with panic and its rider with madness, declares the Lord. I will keep a watchful eye on the house of Judah, but will blind all the horses of the nations. So the horses are blind, but the Lord is looking and seeing. Then the leaders, now this is interesting, and again, I'll try to make sense of this. It's kind of clumsy. Like, who are these people? I mean, if you just want to read like a Bible verse, it's just a Bible verse. But if you're trying to find out what is the prophet Zechariah saying, we've got some opinions. Then the leaders of Judah will say in their hearts, the people of Jerusalem are strong. The people of the Lord Almighty is their God. On that day, I will make the leaders of Judah like a fire pot in a wood pile, like a flaming torch among sheaves. They will consume right and left all the surrounding people, but Jerusalem will remain intact in her place. Chapter 12, verse 7. The Lord will save. Now here comes the list. We've already seen, it talks about the leaders of Judah. Now it says, the Lord will save the dwellings of Judah first. That's sometimes translated, and we'll see it tonight. The tents of Judah first, so that the honor of the house of David and of Jerusalem's inhabitants may not be greater than that of Judah. So right there you've got, it's for all of Israel, all 12 tribes, but we're talking about Jerusalem's deliverance. But we're talking about the tribe of Judah, then the tents of Judah. We're talking about the inhabitants of Jerusalem, which are not living in the tents of Judah. But then somewhere there's this group called the House of David that's separate from those dwelling in Jerusalem, and definitely not those in the tent, because they're all kind of in some kind of competition. And God's trying to even the playing field so that everyone has equal honor, and no one, almost like there's some kind of elitism has set into Jerusalem or Israel at this time. Again, we'll look at that. But you definitely got to notice that there's three definite groups of people mentioned there. Verse 8, on that day the Lord will shield those who live in Jerusalem, so that the feeblest among them will be like David, and the house of David will be like God, like the angel of the Lord going before them. Then here's a summary verse of those first nine verses. On that day I will set out to destroy all the nations that attack Jerusalem. So in other words, what was just said? I'm going to attack or destroy and overthrow the nations that are attacking Jerusalem on that day. In other words, this is the day that the nations fall, the nations, they lose their power, and Jesus takes over. Now, chapter 12, verse 10, we'll look at this next week. Along with that, that was their physical deliverance, verse 10, and I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace and supplication. They will look on me, the one they have pierced, and they will mourn for him as one mourns for an only child, and grieve bitterly for him as one grieves for a firstborn son. On that day, the weeping in Jerusalem will be great like the weeping of Hadad Rimmon, in the plain of Megiddo. The land will mourn, each clan by itself, with their wives by themselves. The clan of the house of David and their wives. The clan of the house of Nathan and their wives. The clan of the house of Levi and their wives. The clan of Shimei and their wives. And all the rest of the clans and their wives. Again, the big deal is a spirit of grace and supplications poured out. They recognized Jesus, apparently, the one they pierced as the Messiah. But then the rest of the chapter begins again to identify the different classes or clans of people that are responding. If nothing else, it's saying everybody. In other words, if nothing else, it's saying all of Israel is saved on that day. And that's what Paul is referring to. That is now an indication of we are in the very end of the end times, and the next thing to take place is the resurrection. Okay, we go to the notes, page 1. I just write there, point 1 is the chapter 12 and 14 is the last section of the book. And again, this section, 12 through 14, is an entire section. We're going to teach our way through it, but it's all one section. It's one prophecy. The point 2 is just saying that chapter 9, verse 1, the oracle or the burden of the word of the Lord is against the land of Hadrad. And Damascus is its resting place. And chapter 2, verse 12, verse 1, it concerns Israel. So there's two different directions. Point 3 kind of sums up chapters 9 through 11, what was talked about there, and we refer to that. Now, the second oracle, what we see going through here is point A, the physical salvation of Israel and Jerusalem when it's surrounded by nations. Point B, we just looked at that in chapter 11, the spiritual salvation of the Jews, the renewal. Next, we're going to see in the following chapter, verse chapter 13, the removal of the idolatry and the striking of the shepherd, which is going to be interesting because that takes place in 30 AD, but now it's kind of in poetic form in the middle of this section. Why is it there? And then E and F, the invasion of Jerusalem, but deliverance provided by the arrival of the Lord. So by the time we get to chapter 12 or 14, we're rehearsing the idea of the nations are surrounding Jerusalem. Uh-oh, what's going to happen? But the Lord comes out, and then the establishment of the kingdom age, and it's all taking place on that day. And so again, it's not going to happen in a 24-hour period, but this is all one set of events that is the same thing. It'd be like talking about, the crucifixion of Jesus. You know, it would involve, the last month of his ministry. All these things happened when he came from Caesarea Philippi into Judea, had the last week on the Temple Mound, and all those things took place. It'd be like one event if we want to talk about that. Okay, point 5, chapter 12 through 14 is clearly eschatological. Chapter 12, verses 1 through 9, the verse we're looking at tonight, Jerusalem is delivered from an invasion by the nations. Then chapter 12, verse 10 through chapter 13, verse 9, or all of chapter 13, the Lord's salvation and power affecting the various people groups of Israel. And then chapter 14, the development and details of what chapter 12 and 13 were talking about. And then we go to bottom of page 1. Here we go, chapter 12, verse 1. Reading the same thing now in the English Standard Version. It says, the oracle of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. This is a prophecy, a burden that Zechariah received, and it's about Israel. Thus declares the Lord, and it now describes the Lord these ways. There's three things that are said, and I'll break it down this way. You can look at it different ways. It's going to be the heavens, it's going to be the earth, and it's going to be the spirit of man. And he is the creator. The creator of all the heavens, the creator of all of the earth, and the one who created the very spirit of man himself is going to do these things. The point that I'm going to make here, that I think Zechariah is making, is God created all this, including the spirit of man, and now he's going to restore all of it, including the spirit of man, for his kingdom. And it's kind of like, well, are you sure it's going to happen? Okay, listen, you're living this. You're the heavens, the earth, the spirit of man. He already has created this, and now he's decided this is when and how I'm going to restore all these things. So it's kind of like saying he created it, he's going to restore it, that settles it. It's like, this is not like, how's it going to happen? How can it not happen? It's an oracle. He said, earth be, earth was, man be, man was. Now he's going to say, I'm restoring it. It's as good as done. We're just waiting for it to happen. And so, thus says the Lord, who stretched out the heavens, who founded the earth, and formed the spirit of man within him. That's what you see on the notes on page 2. That's point 3. Since the Lord is the creator, he can also be the one who completely restores the creation. All three will be restored by the one who created them, the heavens, the earth, and man. It's going to happen. And again, this section is about complete renewal and restoration of Israel physically and spiritually, and its impact it's going to have on all of the world. Like Paul writes, if when Israel is saved, when they receive salvation, it's the resurrection. Everything is going to follow Israel. Chapter 12, verse 2. This is the Lord speaking now. Behold, he's going to do this by doing this. I am about to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering to all the surrounding peoples. The siege of Jerusalem will also be against Judah. And so this is what he's about to do. This is his plan. And it's one of those things where can't we do this without so much pain and destruction and a siege? Can't Israel just be like, okay, you're restored? It's like, no. I'm going to use their restoration. I'm going to surround them with the nations. And as I'm restoring them, I'm going to destroy the nations. It's like, oh, well, you know, this is what it got. So it's like, this seems a lot more complicated than it needs to be. And it could be a lot more confusing. Especially in chapter 14, when half the city is ransacked and they're starting to take the plunder out of the city, and then the Lord comes back. So if you read chapter 14, this is not like the nations all gather around and then we're waiting and waiting, like Saul was looking at the Philistines and had 40 days just staring at Goliath and nothing's happening. And then David comes out and just kills Goliath. Oh, okay, that's over. It's like there's actually an invasion, and the city begins to fall. People are being deported and sold into slavery. It says the women are being raped, and it's like two-thirds of the city is already gone. Then the Lord goes, it's like, well, I mean, you know, he's telling us ahead of time this is what's going to happen. Behold, I'm about to make Jerusalem a cup, and he's going to be using Israel to overthrow the nations. In these verses, chapter 12, 2 through 11, Jerusalem is mentioned 11 times. And you see right here, chapter 12, verse 2, behold, I'm about to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering to all the surrounding peoples. The siege of Jerusalem will also be against Judah. So in other words, it's an oracle for all of Israel. Then we focus on Jerusalem, but then it says the siege on Jerusalem is also going to be a siege on Judah. I mean, they're going to have to be moving in through Judah to get to Jerusalem, which could that mean they've already gone through the northern part of Israel, coming down all the northern tribes to get to Judah, to get to Jerusalem. So again, it may be that this is, we're just talking about the final invasion of Judah to get to Jerusalem, because northern Israel's already fallen. And again, the armies always invade from the north, if it's Babylon, if it's Assyria, if it's Alexander, and then a cup. A cup that it says Jerusalem's going to be a cup for the nations. A cup is used, you get this, you know, in your own mind, just rifle through the references to the cup of the Lord. I mean, you can think of Gethsemane, you know, Lord say, take this cup from me. You can think of Revelation where a cup is going to be given and they're going to pour it out and they're going to drink the fullness of the wrath of the Lord. Sometimes a cup is a blessing, like Psalm 116:13, I've got that written here. It says, I will lift up the cup of salvation. So God can give you a cup. It's got salvation in it. You can drink salvation. Or Psalm 23:5, my cup overflows. And that's, you know, that's your cup. You've got a cup and God's putting blessings and it's overflowing. So it can be a positive thing, but also it can be negative, like Isaiah 51:17. It says, wake yourself, stand up, O Jerusalem, you who have drunk from the hand of the Lord the cup of his wrath. So here is the cup of God's wrath that was given to Jerusalem, and it's been given to Jerusalem on several occasions. And Jerusalem has drunk the cup, not just tasted from the cup, but bottoms up. I mean, they drank the whole cup. Here's the, have a drink of God's wrath. It's just like, blah, 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 you know. Give me another round. Drunk from the hand of the Lord, the cup of his wrath, who have drunk to the dregs, the bowl, the cup of staggering. So now they've drunk the wrath of God, and they're, in a sense, they're under the influence of the wrath of God. They're just staggering to their defeat because they've drunk the wrath of God. Just like, you know, you could flip it around, your cup is overflowing, and you're just staggering with the blessings of God. It's the same thing. You're overcome by the blessings, or you're overcome by the wrath. Jeremiah 25, 17, so I took the cup from the Lord's hand and made all the nations to whom he sent me drink it. And you go through Jeremiah. Jeremiah didn't just prophesy to Jerusalem. He prophesied to Edom and Moab and Ammon and Babylon, the Philistines, Egypt. He prophesied to all the, because it says he was called to be a prophet to the nations, plural. And he actually wrote letters to these nations. There's a time in the book of Jeremiah where there's a delegation of the kings coming together in Jerusalem from the other nations trying to conspire. How are we going to revolt against Babylon? And Jeremiah would have had himself or Baruch meet them each with a letter of prophecy about don't do this stupid thing because you're going to come under the wrath of God because Nebuchadnezzar is God's hand. But nonetheless, Jeremiah says, so I took the cup from the Lord's hand. Again, he took the cup from the Lord's hand and made the nations to whom he sent me drink it. And that would probably refer to, I took the notes, I took the message, wrote it down, and sent it to them and made them read this cup of God's wrath that's coming on you. And so those are some examples. And again, I put down there also in Revelation, we see it in Gethsemane. We could spend all night talking about the cup. But in this case, it is the cup, the Lord's cup, that he's got of wrath. It's time for judgment, and this is time for the judgment of the nations. And who is this cup? This cup is Jerusalem. He's saying, come, drink from my cup. What's that mean? Come, invade Jerusalem. Hey, come here. Look what I got for you. Look at Jerusalem. Come, touch Jerusalem. It's the wrath of God. So they would be wise to say, not going to drink from that cup. Not Jerusalem, you just stay. We're just going to go somewhere else. But they can't get away from Jerusalem. It's like bait in a trap. And so that's what this is saying, chapter 12, verse 2. Behold, I'm about to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering. You know, the nation is going to be staggering under the influence of Jerusalem. Again, think about that. Think about, again, we don't know, I'm not a prophet, and we don't have the Word of God speaking to us clearly about all the things going on in the world today. But think about people, leaders, nations, that you see them just stupidly staggering to, it's like, stop! Do you see what's happening? And they're just like almost drunk on something, just going, I've got a great philosophy, I've got a great idea, we can't stop this. It's destroying the nation, it's destroying people. It's like, no, it's going to work, I know it's going to work. And like zombies, they're just stumbling forward. It's like, what is going on there? It could be they're under the influence of the cup of God's wrath. God says, hey, come look at this. Wouldn't it be great if we could transgender everybody? Yeah, come look at this. It's like, oh, what a great idea. And it's like, it's actually a trap. It's like, don't go there. And you have science. You have logic. You have experience. You have history. You have biology. It's like, can't hear anything because I'm under the influence of the wrath of God. And see, you know, there's a place where we pray, we intercede, but, and again, I'm not saying we shouldn't, but in this case right here, you can't pray for the nations because they're under the influence of God's wrath. And when you see people, they can't be affected with logic, with science, with prayer. It's like, are they undone? Again, I'm not saying they are. I don't have that insight, but I do have the Bible of situation after situation of people being under the influence and just staggering to their defeat. It's like, don't you see, you're going to lose, you're going to get crushed. It's like, no, I think I can do this, I think I can drive. You're drunk, man, get off the road. It's like, no, I've got this. It's like drunk driving, drunk leadership. They're drunk on the wrath of God. Best thing you do is just get off the road. Nonetheless, you don't want to ride with them, but yet, here we are in the car with them. We're going down through the 21st century with staggering leadership under the wrath of God. If I'm right, I may be wrong. Okay. Behold, I'm about to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering to all the surrounding peoples. The siege of Jerusalem will also be against Judah. I write this down here, point four. The event we just talked about, or we're getting ready to discuss, is going to be discussed in chapter 14 of Zechariah. So we're not just going to say this and then move on. Chapter 14 is going to talk about it again. I'm going to flip over to Joel and read this, because I think this right here, this is not the first time this has been spoken of. It is an eschatological event. But Joel chapter 3, and again, we've studied this already. Joel chapter 3, in my NIV, for example, chapter 3 is titled by Zondervan, by the translators, it's titled, The Nations Judged. That's not in the text, but that's what they've done. And chapter 3 of Joel, verse 1, in those days and at that time, when I restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem, I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. The valley of Jehoshaphat simply means, as we talked about, the Lord judges. So it could be a particular place, or it could just be the place that the Lord judges. And where's the Lord going to judge? He's going to judge them at Jerusalem. So it could be nothing more than just the place that God judges the nations. Where is that? Well, he's going to lead them to Jerusalem. Or you could try to explain it as we did before. It's the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which is the Kidron Valley extending down towards the Dead Sea. And it's in that area. I think it's in that general idea there. But nonetheless, there I will enter into judgment against them concerning my inheritance of the people of Israel. Now this is exactly what Jesus refers to when he talks about the sheep and the goats, and that he's going to judge the nations on how they treated. He says, what you've done to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. And what he's talking about, he's not talking about church, he's not talking about Christianity. He's talking about how the nations treat his brothers, or these brethren of mine, which are the Jews. And you say, well, that's an interpretation of the New Testament, except that Jesus is referring to this, and it says, there I will enter into judgment against them concerning my inheritance, my people Israel. I'm judging the nations based on how they treated my inheritance, my people Israel. And how they treated them is probably in a reference to how they treated them during the 7-year tribulation, or the 70th week, especially when the Antichrist, the false shepherd, abandoned them and left them to the fate of the nations. The nations are going to try to plunder them, but some are going to try to help them because of some faith that they've developed. Okay, and it goes on, says, for they were scattered and my people among the nations, goes on. But what we want to see is verse Joel chapter 9, chapter 3, verse 9. He says, proclaim this among the nations. Prepare for war. Rouse the warriors. Let all the fighting men draw near and attack. Beat your plowshares into swords. That's the opposite of what he says in the millennium. And your pruning hook into spears. In other words, take all your farming equipment. We're not going to try to farm anything. We need more weapons. Ukraine needs more weapons. Take all your agriculture equipment, put bombs on it, and send it to Ukraine. Or in this case, send it to the Middle East. Send it to Jerusalem. Let the weakling say, I am strong. Meaning, you're not a warrior, but hey, everybody's a warrior today. We need more warriors. They start recruiting everybody for the war. So when it says, let the weakling say, I am strong, that's not a statement of faith. That's, these guys are a bunch of, you know, whatever you want to call them, postmodern Westerners. They can't even plant a seed. They can't even start a fire. Oh, well, put them in a uniform and send them to the front lines. It's like, let the weakling say, I am strong. Come quick, all you nations from every side, and assemble there. Bring down your warriors, O Lord. Let the nations be roused. Let them advance into the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I will sit to judge all the nations on every side. Swing the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, trample the grapes, for the winepress is full, and the vats overflow. So great is their wickedness. Multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and moon will be darkened, and the stars no longer shine, for the Lord will roar from Zion again. I really think, again, this is my teaching here. Why are they not shining? Well, they've all vanished. No, but you can't see them because the Lord is here. The glory has come here, and the moon and stars are distant. You can't see them. It's like you can't see the stars when the sun's out. Imagine not being able to see the sun because the Lord is here. And I think that's the idea. It's not that they all just vaporized. Again, that's my understanding. That's my teaching. The sun and moon will be darkened, and the stars no longer shine. The Lord will roar from Zion and thunder from Jerusalem. The earth and sky will tremble, but the Lord will be a refuge for his people, a stronghold for the people of Israel. Now, I think, and then I can go on from there and go read Revelation. I wrote 12. I think it's supposed to be 16, but nonetheless, it's also 19. That's all taking place. Let's go on back to Zechariah. Chapter 12, verse 3. After saying, "Behold, I'm about to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering to all the surrounding peoples, the siege of Jerusalem will also be against Judah." Chapter 12, verse 3. "On that day," that eschatological day, "I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the people." So now Jerusalem is not a cup. Jerusalem is a stone that the peoples or the nations are going to try to move. "A heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will surely hurt themselves." All who engage in trying to move Jerusalem or move this stone are going to hurt themselves. "And all the nations of the earth will gather against it." So I think this is a universal attack on Jerusalem. I mean, we can go to Revelation and we can see all the demons going off to gather all the kings for battle. They may come to battle against each other, but they're ultimately going to turn and move into Jerusalem. If they meet in the Valley of Armageddon, where they will meet, that would be a great place to meet. It's north of Jerusalem. Then they just march down from the north into Jerusalem. That may all play into this battle. They meet at Armageddon and march into the Valley of Judgment, or the Valley of Jehoshaphat. "On that day I'll make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will surely hurt themselves, and all the nations of the earth will gather against it." And I just made some comments there. Chapter 12, verse 4. "On that day," again you keep hearing this, "declares the Lord, I will strike every horse with panic and its riders with madness, but for the sake of the house of Judah I will keep my eyes open when I strike every horse of the peoples with blindness." So for some reason, you know, they're riding on horses and there's riders. The horses are going to go into panic. Something's going to happen. And as they're approaching Jerusalem or during the invasion, the siege, again, it's not just an approach. Even Zechariah is talking here about a siege. When you get to chapter 14, it's not just a siege. It's actually a full-fledged invasion. They've broken the walls and they're deporting people. So somewhere in that, there's going to be an intervention. The horses will panic and the riders will go mad. Now, what does that mean? I mean, are we going to go so, again, it is worth considering. I'll just throw it out there. It is worth considering in our modern age that we are going to get so confused and so far against science and reality that we're going to go backwards. I mean, for example, we're going to get rid of gasoline, we're going to get rid of all innovations, and we're going to get to a place where we can't produce anything. We're right back to the Dark Ages. I mean, it's possible. I mean, again, man began in the garden and declined into caves. Even in the Revelation, talks about people hiding in caves. They're not hiding in their mansions. They're hiding in caves. I mean, everything's collapsing. It's the tribulation. So again, you just read it literally. It could be horses. Or you're going to have to, you know, do the late great planet Earth with all these things where the horses represent some kind of a tank and the scorpions represent helicopters. And it's like, okay, you can do that too, but you're kind of putting it right here in this time frame. And this is not taking place today. This is taking place on that day. And on that day is not today. And so things could change. I don't have an answer for it. I'm just reading what it says. The horses are going to panic, and the riders are going to have madness. And the Lord is going to keep his eyes open on Judah, seeing them. But as far as the horses, they're blind. So their military equipment, whatever it is going to not be able to find and locate and function effectively. But the Lord is going to see everything and be in full operation. So the nations have come. They've attacked the stone. When they attack the stone, they try to move it. All of a sudden, nothing is visible, whatever that means. The riders are in panic. They're in madness. The horses are panicking. The riders are going mad. They're going crazy. They can't figure anything out. And the Lord himself is seeing all of this. He's got the full advantage. That's what Zechariah is saying. Again, these are words of encouragement in 5:18. These people in chapter 7 had just been told, you're going to detest the good shepherd and be left to be killed, be destroyed, and eat each other. We're going to give you a bad shepherd who's worthless, who's going to eat some of you himself, torture some of you, and then abandon you. What does that mean? Well, whatever it means, here the day is coming where the nations are going to come, and they're going to go mad, they're going to go blind, and the Lord is going to see Judah, and nothing's going to happen. You're going to be protected. So, I mean, you have negative, now here's the positive. Now we begin this, page 3, chapter 12, verse 5. I've got some ideas. Then the clans of Judah shall say to themselves, when they see this, when they see the stone not moved, Jerusalem's not being moved, they see the invaders going mad, panicking, the horses are blind, and they see that they're protected, they're going to say, well, I see what's happening. The inhabitants of Jerusalem have strength through the Lord of hosts, their God. This is because the Lord is fighting for us. Similar things happen, again, from what I've heard. I wasn't there. I wasn't, like, you know, reading all the details of it. But I've heard several stories from the war of 1967, even the war of 73, of Israel. And again, that was not the event. It may be something leading up to these events. But several times Israel, well, I did do a series and talked through some of the battles that Israel had in 1948. And how, I mean, they should have been eliminated. I mean, nations would invade them, and pretty soon Israel would defeat them and then gain territory. Israel started off small with a little partition of land, and the nations that kept invading them, Israel kept winning, and by the time it got done, they'd redrawn the map of the Middle East. A big chunk of it's now Israel's because you invaded, they won. It's like playing poker. I mean, you played poker, you laid the money down, I won, it's my money now. And Israel would say, man, we own the whole table now. So they got, well, we'll give some of the money back. And so they had to try and figure out where to do these things. And in 67, there's several accounts where just strange things were happening. It's almost like God wanted them there. Again, not these verses weren't taking place, but it's almost like preparation for this. Again, I throw that out there. You can think about that and research it yourself. But chapter 12, verse 6, on that day, after they say, the inhabitants of Jerusalem have strength through the Lord of hosts, their God. I mean, he's fighting for us. Chapter 12, verse 6, on that day, I'll make the clans of Judah like a blazing pot in the midst of wood, like a flaming torch among the sheaves. In other words, when they're trying to move the stone that will not move, Judah will be like a torch, like a fire in dry sheaves. I mean, anything Judah touches is going to be devoured. I mean, it's kind of like earlier we saw in Zechariah, they were devouring sling stones. I mean, everything they threw at them, they just devoured them, and it became drunk with victory. Well, here, a blazing pot in the midst of wood. Everyone knows how dangerous that would be. You go into a pile of dry wood or dry sheaves with a blazing pot or a flaming torch, it's like you're asking for a fire. This thing is going to burst into flames. And that's what's happening. The nations have come in like dry sheaves. Judah's lit up like a torch. It's like, the nations are just disappearing as they're trying to move the stone. And the reason that is happening is the Lord is... Now, that didn't happen in 586 B.C. That didn't happen in 70 A.D., but it will happen on this day. And the difference is the Lord is not fighting against Jerusalem. The Lord is fighting for Jerusalem. On that day, I'll make the clans of Judah like a blazing pot in the midst of the wood, like a flaming torch among the sheaves, and they shall devour to the right and to the left, surrounding peoples, all the surrounding peoples, while Jerusalem shall again be inhabited in its place. It's a stone, it's not moving, it's inhabited in its place. And here it says all the surrounding peoples are the surrounding nations, not the nations of the world, but the surrounding nations, they're going to be consumed. Now we just introduced right here the clans of Judah. And this is the first group that we're mentioning. Chapter 12, verse 7. And the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first. So are the clans of Judah, we'll say tents of Judah is another a synonym. It's the tribe of Judah, the clans of Judah. The tents of Judah. I write this down here in the notes. Yeah, the tents, point one. The tents of Judah could be the military outside. Again, I don't know the answer, okay? I don't know what this means. But it's. I will say this. I think this is clearly talking about specific groups of people. At the end, it means at least everybody. But early on here, it appears to be talking about this group is separated and different from this group, and this group lives differently and has different responsibilities than this group, and maybe is rejected by this group over here. It's like divisions. So the tents of Judah here, the clans of Judah, unless they're two different groups, I think they'll say they're the same, or it could be the tents, they're the lower class living outside the city. So you're going to have inhabitants, well, let's read this. Chapter 12, verse 7, and the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first. So right here, these guys start winning first. And one of the reasons for this, it appears, that these other groups are more prestigious. They're more the ones that should be winning. This group right here, it's like, whoa, if they're winning first, it's like, this is the Lord. I mean, these guys will get overrun. But these guys will probably pull off a victory. But when these guys start winning, you know, the number 16 seeded team starts winning the battles. It's like, I guess everybody's going to win this tournament. Bad example, because everybody can't win a tournament. And the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. So now you've got the house of David, which is different than the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And this would be, again, the people living in the city. I'll just write city. The house of David would be the house of David. It would be, I'll say, royalty, or I'll just write royal. The house of David, it would be some lineage of David. It could be the government. So here you've got the city people. Could this be the elite? The royal, the seat of David, the government, which is not the same, or they're two different groups than the citizens or the elite. And then you've got the tents of Judah, the tribes of Judah, or the clans that are outside the city. Are they the soldiers? Are they the poor? Are this, you know, the poor, the elite, and the government? These people are expecting for sure, it wouldn't be surprising if they won the battle, but before they get any victory, these people get the victory, so everyone knows it wasn't the house of David, it wasn't the elite, it wasn't the government, you know, some government program. I'm making this up, okay? It says the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the house of David, and the tents of Judah. Who are they? Well, it eventually is going to mean everybody. But here it seems to be divided because they're going to get some victory first. So these guys know they didn't do it, because if it's the house of David, say it's the government or the royalty, maybe it's some government program, it's, you know, their military, it's their strategy, it's their generals or whatever. But they didn't win the battle. The tents of Judah won, outside the city. this could be the elite, you know, the money, the connections. They're part of the world order. They've got connections around the world. They can negotiate a victory, but it's not going to be the house of David, the government per se, with their military or their plans. It's not going to be the elite, the people in the city that's going to win the battle, again, whatever that means. It's going to be the tents of Judah. It's like, we didn't even use this or this. These guys, it's like, they can't win. It must be the Lord. And that's where this is going. Again, you see what's written here is I'm adding to it, trying to make sense of it. And you may be sitting there thinking, I can explain that better. And the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. Chapter 12, verse 8, on that day, once again, eschatological day, the Lord will protect the inhabitants of Jerusalem. He'll protect the inhabitants of Jerusalem, who's ever living in the city, so that the feeblest among them shall be like David. So now, in the city, these guys are going to be protected so that the feeblest, the weakest, it means the ones that stumble, that aren't ready for war, are going to be like David. And the house of David shall be like God, like the angel of the Lord going before them. So now, this right here, this group right here, starts winning first, defeating the nations, the tents of Judah, the clans of Judah, which are not the house of David. You see the problem? Tents of Judah, well, that's the line of David. Well, David comes from the tribe of Judah, but the house of David is the royal line. They're not going to win first, nor are the elite in the city going to win first. These guys, for their negotiations, outside the city were going to win. But that doesn't mean these guys are going to lose. It means it's clearly the Lord. And when they realize the Lord is fighting with them, the people in the city, the inhabitants of the city, the feeblest, these may not be the warriors, they're the elite. They'll become like David. And what was David like? David was heroic on the battlefield. David faced Goliath. David was the great warrior, the great general. The inhabitants of the city will be like David. I mean, wouldn't you like to have an entire military of Davids? Well, that's what it's going to be. So these guys, the victory is going to start here, but when the Lord begins to move, the inhabitants of the city, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, are going to be like David, and whatever that means, I mean, I think it means a great warrior. Well, then this house of David, the royal house, they're going to be, well, look, it says right here, and the house of David shall be like God. Well, now, it doesn't say they're going to be like God, but the house of David, which would be the royal, the government, they're going to be like God. Well, what do you mean? Like the angel of the Lord, it says right here. The house of David shall be like God, like the angel of the Lord, which means, yeah, going before them. Like when Moses led the people through the wilderness, who went in front of him? The angel of the Lord. Who led them in the land? The angel of the Lord. Who fought the battle at Jericho? The angel of the Lord. So now, if the angel of the Lord led you into battle, you won. Because the angel of the Lord was leading you to victory. So the inhabitants of the city, even the weakest, are going to become like the mighty warriors. And your line of the house of David, your government, your royal house, they're going to be like the angel of the Lord. Wherever they lead you, it's like if you start following this government who's now inspired by the Lord, it's like following the angel of the Lord. And who's following? The inhabitants of the city. What are you guys like? You're like Davids, following the angel of the Lord, a bunch of Davids. And the victory began outside with the tents of Judah. It's like, holy smokes, that would cause unity. You see, I mean, if you've got three classes or three, silence. Must be time to go. 7:55. I can start mumbling. But do you understand what that's being said? I'll read it again. Now, you see, you can tell where I'm adding to it, trying to bring some sense to it. Otherwise, it just sounds like, just random statements. Here we go. Chapter 12, verse 7. And the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. They're not going to win the battle because they're winning without them. They're winning and they don't even have your help. But when they start to win, then all of a sudden the inhabitants of the city of David are, well, and the Lord shall give salvation to the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. On that day, the Lord will protect the inhabitants of Jerusalem so that the feeblest among them on that day shall be like David, and the house of David shall be like God, like the angel of the Lord going before them. So they're leading these people into victory after they've already run without anybody's leadership except the Lord being on their behalf. And then we end right here, chapter 12, verse 9. And on that day, I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. So these three classes, whatever they were going to refer to, they're all going to come together, not because they've unified in a human contract or a human government. There may be division, but they're going to come together because the Lord is going to show up and cause these brethren to dwell together in unity, and they're going to be unstoppable because they're unified in the Lord. It's not that they all unified it. They may be separate. There may be tension. Think Sadducees, Pharisees, Zealots, Herodians. Think about 67, 68, 69, 70 AD in Jerusalem. And as the Romans are coming in, the Jews are fighting each other. The different groups were fighting amongst themselves in Jerusalem, even burning each other's food supplies. They're under siege. But this group, they had a storage of food. So this group of Jews ran over and burnt their food so they would die before they died as the Romans were laying siege to the city. That's kind of what I'm talking about. They're like, there's not unity. But when the Lord shows up, in that case, in 70 AD, the Lord just stood back and let them devour each other. The sheep began to eat each other. They're destined for slaughter. This time, the Lord shows up, doesn't show up here or here. He shows up whoever the tents of Judah are. Unexpectedly, they start winning a battle against the nations. And these guys say, surely, it's not them, it's the Lord. If it was our policy or our negotiations or our military, we could say it's us. But with them winning, it's not us, it's the Lord. Then all of a sudden, when they realize that, they step into the power of the Lord, and these guys, the weak has become like David, the government becomes unstoppable like the angel of the Lord leading them, and the nations are driven out. And chapter 12, verse 9, and on that day I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. Now that is talking about the physical deliverance. Next week we'll start talking about chapter 12, which again is a great set of verses, chapter 12, verse 10. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace. And so picking up with this right here, on the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the house of David, a spirit of grace and supplication is going to be poured out on them, and they're going to see the Lord, the one they pierced, and they're going to come to the Lord. It appears right here. This is when what I would say Christian salvation comes to the Jews and they accept Jesus Christ. Again, not because they're becoming Protestants, because they're accepting the one Isaiah talked about, and you know, it lines up with that. So we'll pick that up next week. I'll pray, and if you got any questions or comments, please feel free. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the hope that you hold out for not just the Jews, but for all believers. And we ask that we would remain faithful and follow Jesus. Jesus obeyed and went to the cross and did your will. We ask that we would be faithful to you also and do the things you've called us to. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.